Hey there. Welcome to Monkey Tooth. This is Andrew, and I'm bringing you another storytelling episode today. This one is about fake radio, and I'm not talking about this podcast, although it is fake radio. I'm talking about a project I was up to as a child over one summer, back in 1991, I think. Anyway, I tell the whole story right here. You're about to hear it. It's a bunch of music coming up. I had a good time making it. Hope you have a good time listening to it. If not, good luck out there. Be safe. Enjoy this little story.
When the reflection in the glass that I held to my lips now, babe, revealed the tears that was on my face, walk away from me, yeah. Ooh. Baby, 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 I'd rather be blind.
My love for fake radio began long before podcasting was the popular option. For enthusiasts of pretending to have an audience of listeners was a thing. Although I've been casually talking to no one since I can remember, I recorded my first show after recognizing the power of music and story in the summer of 1991. I was 12. I'd like to tell you that story now, but in order to share it with you, I think it might be helpful to discuss some technologies which are no longer relevant, but were at the top of my personal tech heap in those days. Let's start with the boombox. My sister and I shared a Casio radio with a tape deck, capable of playing and recording over audio cassette tapes. There was a small built-in microphone on the top of the utilitarian gray unit. Next to it was a small but sturdy telescoping antenna, a knob that would let you browse the radio waves, and a rectangular window with a range of AM and FM stations that a slim red needle would pass along, indicating what station you were tuned into. On the front of the radio, sandwiched between the speakers, a clear tray housed the tape you were either playing or recording over. I loved watching the mechanical gears slowly turning when the tape was playing. And more than once, I tried to follow along with my eyes when I pressed the fast-forward button. I couldn't. It was blurry every time. Unless, of course, I blinked really fast. My favorite feature was the record function. You could tune into a radio station and record whatever was playing under your tape deck. You typically needed blank cassettes for this purpose, but somehow, without the help of a search engine, my sister and I learned you could cover a little indentation on the corner of, say, a Bon Jovi cassette with a small piece of tape and record over the gravelly wailings of an East Coast cowboy with the tunes of your choosing.
Let her face at first just go sleep. Turn the wider shade of pale.
The other piece of tech which I think needs a little discussion is the landline-based telephone. If memory serves, we had four telephones in our house. One in the dining room attached to the answering machine, which recorded messages onto its own tiny cassette tape. One in the kitchen with a cord about 15 feet long for semi-private conversations. One in my parents' bedroom, and another in my sister's room, also with a long cord. I could be wrong about this, but it hardly matters. The phones were eventually replaced with cordless ones. Then the answering machine went away, with the phone company housing our messages in the air somewhere. Then I moved out, and within a few years, the whole landline operation was supplanted by cell phones, which have been going everywhere with us, riding near our genitals for well over a decade. The phone I remember having access to was shaped like some sort of elongated shellfish. The earpiece sat obviously on your ear, while the microphone which you spoke into made it all the way to your mouth, the whole design translating into a curved mollusk-like shape, which, when nestled in its cradle, its curly cable trailing like some crazy tail, gave the impression of something at rest but with substantial action potential. The feature on our phone which I found as remarkable then as I do now was simple, the redial button. I don't know how the phone remembered the number you just dialed, I certainly never could, but it did. And with the press of a single button, you could immediately call the person or business you most recently dialed. Invented originally, I would guess, to ease the burden of having to dial a number again and again when the person or business you were trying to reach greeted you with a busy signal, the redial button held a different role in my young hands, calling in to radio stations. Now, if you've never listened to the radio, this may be another piece of the pre-YouTube and Spotify world which needs some explanation, but I won't be the one to give it to you. Just Google All Request Hour and you'll get the picture. If your life experience included all these bits of technology and or time spent listening to the radio, then please forgive me for the entirety of what I've said so far. As I was saying, I used our phone's redial button solely to facilitate my efforts to call in radio stations and request songs. Later in life, I used it to make prank calls even more infuriating to my innocent victims, but that story, while funny, is not so nice. Okay, enough with the technology, I'll tell you my story.
Well, I'm upper class, high society, God's gift to ballroom notoriety, and I always my ballroom, the event is never small. The social pages say I've got the biggest balls of all. I've got big balls, I've got big balls. They're such big balls, and they're dainty big balls. And he's got big balls, and she's got big balls.
But we've got the biggest balls of them all.
And my balls are always...
The home where I grew up was filled with music. My older sisters and brother are musicians. My mom and stepfather met while playing instruments and singing in a church choir, and I would eventually learn to play the guitar and sing once I put down the phone and stopped pestering DJs for music or random people with dumbass pranks. My earliest memories are of music, specifically my mom playing beautiful yet somber Catholic hymns on the piano in our home. Nearly every moment I can recall of my life is accompanied by the song or melody which was in my head when it happened. When my mom and stepdad married and moved in together, I was introduced to his record collection. Up until that point in my life, I'd simply listened to whatever my older siblings were into. I remember lots of Rush, plenty of AC/DC and Iron Maiden thrown in for good angry measure. On a side note, when my dad talked about the bands my sister liked, he always called them Pontius Pilate and the Nail Driving Five. I liked their music for a spell, but my stepdad's music blew it all out of the water. He had original pressings of more than half a dozen Beatles records, along with Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, Jefferson Airplane, Canned Heat, Simon and Garfunkel, and many other artists from the 60s and 70s. I learned how to work the turntable and would listen to those records over and over again. I'm now incredibly thankful to him for being so generous with those discs and cringe at the thought of some sticky and clumsy kid handling such delicate and rare items. I eventually found my way to exploring the roots of a great deal of that music through Robert Johnson, Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker, Lonnie Johnson, Otis Rush, and others. It made me appreciate the place in Mississippi where I lived for its musical heritage. Listening to the blues eventually led me to an appreciation for the unequaled soul and R&B of the 60s and 70s, a great deal of which had also been recorded in the South, namely Memphis, where all the radio stations I liked were broadcasting. Artists like Otis Redding, Irma Thomas, Sam Cooke, Booker T, Al Green, and Willie Mitchell are at the top of my list of favorites.
No fire is too hot, no snow is too cold.
I didn't have any access to soul music, though. I hadn't been able to purchase any tapes of my own, and my stepdad's collection was a little light on Stax, Hi, and Motown records, so I had to rely on the radio. The stations where soul and R&B were being broadcast had a tendency to play a little bit too much modern R&B for my tastes, which in the 80s and 90s tended to be the saccharine parody of the real thing. So it was a little difficult to hear much of the good stuff on the radio there. So if I wanted to hear a specific song, I had two options. One, I could wait around and listen to tunes and advertisements until I heard the particular tune I was looking for. Or two, I could call in to an all-request hour and politely ask for a specific tune. The first option could be tedious and frustrating and, more often than not, landed some terrible commercial jingle playing on repeat in my porous brain. The second option wasn't without its limitations either. It was notoriously hard to get your call answered by a DJ, with most attempts meeting with an aforementioned busy signal. Hence the beauty of the redial button on our Shellfish phone. The other limitation was the type of music you could request from any particular station. It needed to be within the scope of that station's genre. For instance, you couldn't count on having a soul and R&B request played on a country music station. And for a variety of reasons unknown to me, the soul and R&B stations didn't seem to be taking requests. So I made a concentrated effort to always be ready to hit record when I heard a song I liked, and I found there were two stations and times of the day where I could make my requests. One was a public radio station with amateur and unpaid DJs, but a wide variety of all genres, in one place and commercial free. The show I was most interested in featured classic R&B. It was broadcast in the middle of the week, in the middle of the day. The other was a rock station, which would occasionally play a cool Al Green tune or something, if you asked nicely. That show was on late at night, so I had to keep the volume down, but since it was summer, I was free to stay up later than normal. Between those two options, I began building my first playlist.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Mo would like to welcome y'all to the Funky Soul Night here at RC. Featuring Joe Perkins and the Memphians. Y'all know the business. Jack, we coming to y'all live. Lady, go see the bartender and get out here on the floor, baby.
I found myself in awe of the radio DJ's job. I recorded DJs I liked and paid special attention to the ways they spoke about the music they were about to play, or tunes and artists they had just played. I recorded sign-ins, weather and traffic reports, the sign-off for the night, and passing the mic to the next guy. I felt like I could do it, and I wanted the job. However, if you can imagine it, the voice you're hearing now has not always been in my chest. In fact, when I managed on rare occasions to get to a ringing telephone before my sister, the person on the other end of the line often thought I was her. And it wasn't because my sister had an unusually deep voice. The high-pitched and childish tones emanating from my throat did not exactly recommend me for radio work. But being unqualified has rarely stopped me from trying something new, so I decided to create my own fake radio show. I had a very specific vision for how I wanted the show to go down. The show, lasting almost 25 minutes, would begin with a few lines of monologue, then the intro song, after which I would record a little banter, all in a fake voice, of course, then cue my playlist. After a few tunes, I'd record what few facts I had about the artists at my disposal before wrapping it up with a fake weather report and one last song after my sign-off for the next fake DJ, who, after not having shown up for nearly 30 years, is, now that I think about it, definitely fake fired. As you may have guessed, it took an enormous amount of patience and timing for a 12-year-old. I thank my parents for never buying me any video games or letting me have a television in my room. Had they done it, there's almost no chance I would have spent so much time alone, speaking in what is now likely considered a racist parody of a black man's voice in a Mississippi patois, repeatedly calling radio stations, stealing songs, and dreaming up outrageous weather patterns, all so I could have my own personal radio experience. Of all my convictions, I was most strongly committed to my intro song. It absolutely had to be a classic. Before I learned the art of long-distance driving, inspiration often found me late at night. The inspiration for my show's intro tune came to me one evening, sometime after 10:30, the ethereal late night of a 12-year-old.
Well, a nickel is a nickel, dime is a dime. House full of children and now one mine. I got to bundle up and go. I got to bundle up and go. Well, you have a pile of women, sure got to bundle up and go.
I finally knew what song I wanted to have as the lead-in. When a Man Loves a Woman by Percy Sledge. Being impulsive and weird, I immediately started dialing into one of my two best bets for a fulfilled request, and was shocked when I heard the DJ's voice on the other end of the phone on the first try. Mercifully, I remembered to turn down the radio just in case I was on air. If you don't know why that's important, feel free to Google that as well. The DJ took my call off air, and he seemed just as shocked that a small girl was calling in so long after what was surely her bedtime. After explaining to him that I was a boy, I told him what I wanted to hear. Can you please play When a Man Loves a Woman? Sure thing, man. Take it easy. I was wild with anticipation. The DJ came back after a few more songs, fading out the last one quite nicely, and started to introduce the next batch of requested songs in the mix. I'd spent so much time practicing my pre-show intro, I had to nail the timing of when I hit the record button so I didn't get any of the real DJ in my mix. I was anxious and had not yet turned the volume up on my radio quite loud enough, and I almost missed it when he said, "And first up, When a Man Loves a Woman by Michael Bolton." My fingers and brain were in total conflict, and I nearly blew the whole thing by hitting record. But something deep inside me sent the right signal, and I narrowly missed recording the beginning of, in my opinion, a rat-shit awful version of a fantastic and soulful tune. Right away, I picked up the pale yellow mollusk, smashed the redial button with a little bit too much enthusiasm, and was once again astonished to hear the DJ on the other end. I just called a few minutes ago to request a song. Yeah, man, I recognize your voice. What's up? So, thanks for taking my request, but Michael Bolton? That's terrible, man. Could you please play the Percy Sledge version instead? You're joking. Nope, totally serious. Michael Bolton sucks, man. I forgot he did this song too. Wow, he said. Man, this is a first for me. I'll see what I can do. He hung up with a laugh. When the Michael Bolton version ended, the DJ came back on air. By request, that was Michael Bolton, he put special emphasis on that point, with When a Man Loves a Woman. After a brief chuckling pause, he carried on, "So, would I tell you that I just got an earful from a child about having played that version of the song? I mean, a very small child, probably like 10. I bristled slightly, but somehow felt famous," he continued. "Now, I'm not the kind of guy to ever play the same song twice for pretty much any reason, really, but tonight, hope you understand, I'm going to play you the original version," more emphasis on the DJ's part, "of When a Man Loves a Woman, this time by Percy Sledge. If you don't like it, Blaine the little dude somewhere in Mississippi. And just like that, the cymbals and organ of the opening lines of the song rang out. I was so rattled I completely forgot to hit the record button on cue and missed the first 3 seconds of the song. Years later, I was tending bar in Memphis. A man I recognized from billboards all over town, advertising a morning show on a popular radio station, walked in and sat at the far end of the bar. I always found images of radio DJs to be strange and unsettling, mostly because I thought one of the main benefits of being on the radio is that your face gets to be anonymous while your voice is famous. Also, voices and faces rarely seem to match, except for some reason with women. Their faces and voices almost always sync up to me. Anyhow, this radio DJ was the same guy I'd pestered all those years before. He'd done his time on the late night shift for a bunch of years, putting up with enough of the call-in requests, and had been rewarded with a primo slot in the AM show. When his voice hit my ears ordering a cocktail, I knew it was him. We chatted for a bit while he drank and waited on some friends to arrive. When the timing was right for it, I told him my side of the call-in all those years ago. His face lit up the moment I said, "When a man loves a woman." He laughed at the top of his lungs. "Shit, man, I've been telling that story for 15 years. He laughed and laughed and was shaking my hand as his friends arrived. Without letting go of me, he turned to his buddies and said, "Hey, check this out, man. Remember me telling you about that kid who called in and gave me a bunch of shit for playing Michael Bolton instead of Percy Sledge? Well, that son of a bitch makes a mean gin and tonic.
And now I'm trying to get back to my baby. Just running around, showing up is killing me. Let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me in, let me in. Let me in, let me ease on in. Look into my..."
Fortunately, my first fake radio project was as short-lived as it was terrible. However, it sticks with me now, almost 30 years later, as a reminder to be more childlike. Thinking of those days, I can almost feel again the newness of experience, the strangeness of interacting with adults, the joy of discovering music, and of course, the casual joke of trying to be a person. I'm also reminded of how the music I've known in my life has changed with me. I can listen to old songs now and feel so many of the same emotions I felt as a boy, but also be reminded of experiences considerably more complex. On rare occasions, my interpretation of these tunes is tainted by a mix of my own self-doubt and a pointless, cynical critique. However, there is one tune which sticks to my memory like a lead dart. After countless times around the turntable in my head, it remains, unchanged and forever, the best lead-in tune to the worst fake radio show ever produced.